It's 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting a setback to the Islamic State in Iraq. The Iraqi government has pronounced the provincial capital of Ramadi recaptured from Islamic State fighters, ending an offensive that began in mid-November. It represents Baghdad's most significant victory over the IS group since it came on the scene in force 18 months ago. U.S. spokesman Mark Toner Monday welcomed the news.
We commend the government of Iraq and the brave Iraqi forces that have displayed such tremendous perseverance as well as courage in the fight to return Ramadi, the capital of Anbar province, back to the Iraqi people. The coalition has supported this operation every step of the way with hundreds of airstrikes and through our train, advise, and assist program and has assisted Iraqi forces to effectively maneuver and counter ISIL's maneuvers and tactics in this very complex environment.
Iraq's Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi said 2016 will be the year the Islamic State has driven from his country and said Iraq's second largest city, Mosul, is next. In northern Nigeria, the death toll from insurgent attacks has gotten higher with dozens more killed, perhaps as many as 80, as scores more wounded in separate attacks blamed on the Boko Haram militant group. In and near the Borno State capital Maiduguri early Monday, many were killed in shootings and blasts. A twin suicide attack killed at least 30 others in a busy marketplace in the town of Madagali, about 150 kilometers southeast in Adamawa State. An army offensive counteroffensive this year has recaptured most territory held by the militant group, which has resorted to hit-and-run attacks on targets such as markets, bus stations, and places of worship. The six-year Boko Haram insurgency has left some 20,000 dead. This is VOA News. A Russian vessel carrying more than 11,000 kilograms of low-enriched uranium left Iran for Russia Monday, part of the July nuclear agreement with Iran, a development that's been hailed by U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry as a significant step toward fulfilling Tehran's commitment to the agreement. Regional analyst Ian Lustig of the University of Pennsylvania also says it demonstrates Russia's ability to be a positive force in the Middle East.
The Russians have now shown that they can be effective in the Middle East when it comes to weapons of mass destruction. You'll remember that the chemical weapons in Syria were removed according to a plan advanced by the Russians, albeit after threats from the United States. And in this case, the threats came from the United States and from Israel, and Russia again has stepped in, at least to provide the venue for the delivery of these materials.
Iran, awaiting the lifting of sanctions, is also obligated to remove thousands of centrifuges used to enrich uranium and redesigning a heavy water reactor so it cannot be used to produce weapons-grade plutonium. A new U.S. national poll shows the highest number of Americans dissatisfied with their government's anti-terrorism efforts than at any time since the 2001 terrorist attacks. Fully 40% of those surveyed by the cable news channel CNN and the Opinion Research Center believe the terrorists are winning. Tom Sanderson is director of the Transnational Threats Program at the Centers for Strategic and International Studies.
I would certainly say that ISIS is very strong. They are on the march in many places. They are losing territory in other places. But generally speaking, I do think that ISIS is showing itself to be a durable, effective, persistent, lethal threat. And we should be doing more to counter that threat, but I don't think we need to act like we are under siege and under attack and that this is an existential threat.
Coming just weeks after the Paris and San Bernardino, California attacks, the survey finds three-quarters of Americans critical of the Obama administration's anti-terror efforts. Rival Burundian factions, including a government delegation, have taken part in talks in Uganda aimed at ending months of political violence that has left hundreds dead and tens of thousands displaced. Members of the opposition and civil society also took part in the mediated talks under the auspices of the East African Community at Entebbe outside Kampala. Monday's meeting was designed to lay the groundwork for negotiations in earnest, expected to get underway January 6th in Arusha, Tanzania. Nine people died, hundreds more were left homeless by fires that engulfed hundreds of shacks in Cape Town, South Africa. Officials said the blazes occurred on the weekend. Severe weather across the U.S. has left more than 40 dead over the Christmas holiday period. A combination of snow, sleet, and hail, along with tornadoes and flooding, resulting in travel delays for millions. I'm Victor Beatty.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, December 29th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Burundi's government said it is not happy with the group chosen to represent all political opposition parties at the Kampala peace talks.
We would have hoped to have many more groups speaking. Unfortunately, what happened was that the opposition was given only one slot. And of course, we were not happy about the group which was selected because we do not believe that it is a legitimate group.
Alain Nyamitwe is Burundi's foreign minister. Elizabeth Paulat will give us a full report from the Kampala talks. A South Sudan rebel representative says talks in Juba on implementing the August Peace Accord are progressing. And a series of Boko Haram suicide bombings killed at least 50 people.
We are desperately trying to maintain relevance, but I can tell you they have been seriously degraded and technically defeated because they can no longer have the capacity and the ability to attack and hold ground at will.
Colonel Sani Kuka Sheikh Usman is spokesman for the Nigerian military. It seems not many Zimbabweans like the introduction of the Chinese yuan as their country's currency. And looking back at 2015 Europe's migrant crisis, those stories plus Marco Oman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Burundi's government negotiator and the opposition came out of the first session of peace talks in Uganda divided over the question of international peacekeepers. Elizabeth Paulat reports from the State House in Kampala where the talks were held.
Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni gave the opening remarks, saying that while he recognized the sovereignty of Burundi, it could not be a reason for inaction on the part of the international community.
1 million people dead, just here, and we were watching. What could we do? Because if you come in, you are invading the sovereign country. In Kenya here, people died and couldn't do anything. Here in Uganda, Idi Amin killed 800,000 people. Nobody could come in. We were dying under sovereignty.
The Burundi government delegates say they are fighting insurgents who had attempted a coup. They also say the government is within its rights to look for those perpetrating violence. However, opposition members and many citizens say the government is committing extrajudicial killings, torture, and political violence. Violence erupted in Burundi last April after President Pierre Nkurunziza made a bid for a third term, despite the constitution limiting presidents to two terms. Nkurunziza was able to run on a technicality and won. Since then, waves of violence have grown increasingly troubling. The African Union has authorized sending 5,000 peacekeepers to Burundi. François Nayamoya, the Secretary General of the MSD opposition party, says the peacekeepers are needed to go forward.
Il faut absolument que la force africaine...
Nayamoya says the African Union forces need to arrive to secure the population's well-being. He says this will be a condition if dialogue has a chance to continue. Government negotiator and foreign affairs minister Alain Nyametwe says no to peacekeepers.
The issue of troops has been dealt with, and it is not up to the opposition to call for troops. This one, in which country? Let them say whatever they want, but I can tell you that issue has been resolved. The people of Burundi have rejected it. The government has said no. How can they deploy without the consent of the government?
Monday's session brought together some of East Africa's political heavyweights. Officials from the African Union, United States, European Union, United Nations, and East African community came together alongside Burundi's government representatives and the opposition. The next round of talks are scheduled for January 6th. However, Burundi's government says it has yet to commit to the date, and further consultations must take place before continuing dialogue. Elizabeth Pala for VOA News, Kampala, Uganda.
Burundi's foreign minister says his government believes the first day of talks among Burundi's rival parties aimed at finding solutions to the country's crisis went well. However, Alain Nyamitwe says his government was not pleased with the group invited to represent the entire opposition in Burundi. He says with as many as 43 political parties in Burundi, it is not acceptable for one group to speak on behalf of all opposition parties. In addition, Nyamitwe says the group Canary, chosen to represent all opposition parties, has been involved in violence and has no popular following.
We came here for the relaunch of the dialogue as it had started in Bujumbura a few months ago. Now, we made our statement and other groups made their statements. We would have hoped to have many more groups speaking. Unfortunately, what happened was that the opposition was given only one slot. And of course, we were not happy about the group which was selected, because we do not believe that it is a legitimate group. It doesn't control any legitimacy in the country as per the number of followers, as per the people who are in the institutions. Those are the parties which are duly represented in these institutions were not given the slot, which we didn't find correct.
You said you were not happy with some group. Are you talking about Canary?
I don't really give it too much importance to the name. The thing is, the parties that are in the institutions were not allowed to speak, which was not fine, because we have 43 political parties, and we cannot believe that only one person can speak on behalf of 42 political parties.
President Yoweri Museveni appealed to all sides to make sure that they find a kind of consensus to end the crisis. What do you think about his appeal?
I don't have a problem with that appeal, but I'm concerned about the group that has been invited to the table of discussions, when we know very much that the group has been involved into violent extremism. I'm not the only one saying so. Even other organizations have recorded a number of acts that are attributable to either that group as a platform, or to parties or individuals who are part of it. So I believe that the message should have been sent, directly to them, in the sense of asking them not to continue violent acts, which of course have caused more harm to the country.
So I guess you are referring to Canary, because they were represented. Their representative said they will require an immediate end to what he called massacres, because they cannot negotiate while people are being killed. That's what they said. Your response?
Well, I'm not sure of what he said exactly, but what I know is that some of the people that are part of the coalition or whatever have been, put in the limelight by international organizations, which have accused them of recruiting soldiers in Rwanda and also recruiting youth from refugee camps and training them as soldiers to go and fight in Burundi, which means, therefore, that these allegations of massacres and the like might be directed to them directly.
Ali Nyamitwe is Burundi's foreign minister. He was speaking with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. A Nigerian military spokesman is praising Nigerian troops for what he called their gallantry for killing a number of Boko Haram suicide bombers and arresting one. This came after 14 female suicide bombers Monday attacked the cities of Maiduguri and Mangale in the northeast of the country, killing as many as 50 people. Military spokesman Konasani Kukasheka Osma denied the terrorists are proving President Muhammadu Buhari wrong when he announced last week that Boko Haram had been technically defeated.
There were two suicide attacks on Monday morning in Adamawa and Borno State. The first was around 8 o'clock in the morning, Monday. Two female suicide bombers detonated their bombs at a local market in Matagali, Adamawa State, in which unfortunately 17 people lost their lives and four others suffered several degrees of injuries. Then in Maiduguri, actually what happened was that 14 suspected female suicide bombers attempted to enter into Maiduguri. Seven of them were gunned down before they could have even reached the town. But in the process of confusion, three suspected female suicide bombers found their ways into town and detonated their bombs, in which 26 persons lost their lives, while 85 others suffered several various degrees of injuries.
Is it true, Colonel, that the military captured one of the suicide bombers?
Yeah, it is true. One of the female suicide bombers was captured alive before she could detonate her improvised explosive devices. You might call it bomb. Right now, she's in custody. And the general also commanding the 7th Division has even paraded her before the media earlier on in Maiduguri.
The president had wanted Boko Haram to be ended by December 31st. Now, it seems Boko Haram is going into the new year with a bang instead of the military going out with a bang.
Well, they are desperately trying to maintain relevance, but I can tell you they have been seriously degraded and technically defeated, because they can no longer have the capacity and the ability to attack and hold ground at will. A sort, very sought to attack. attacking soft targets through suicide bombing, just like what we had on Monday in Adama and Borno State. So invariably, it is a sign of a dying phenomenon, and we are determined that we want to make sure that they are defeated, that they can no longer constitute security threat to our country.
Colonel Sani Kukasheka Usma is Nigeria's military spokesman. He was speaking with me from the capital, Abuja. Today is Tuesday, December 29th, and you are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 16 minutes past the hour. An official of South Sudan's rebels said talks in Juba between the rebel advance team and the government on implementing the peace agreement are progressing well. In a timetable released recently by the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, also known as JMEC, the two sides are expected to form a transitional government of national unity by the end of January. Mugumi Davis Rakaringi of VOA South Sudan in Focus program reports from Juba.
Tijong Agwet, who chairs the Agriculture Committee in talks on implementing the peace deal, says he's confident a new cabinet for the transitional government will be in place by the end of January.
So far, up to now, there is no any area of disagreement. There is a process and everything is going well. The president also has shown his willingness to receive his brother, that is Victoria, so that they can form the government of national unity. Then they can implementation can kick off.
In a statement released over the weekend, the head of JMEC, former Botswana President Festus Mohai, said the two sides had agreed to select ministerial portfolios for the transitional government of national unity on January 6th. Mohai says he appreciates the cooperation displayed by both sides so far. Mohai says he looks forward to their continued cooperation to complete the tasks necessary for establishing the transitional government. Agwet says the armed opposition will work with the government, the former detainees, and other political parties to establish the new government based on the peace deal.
They will sit down and then they will go with the method that is in the agreement of selecting the ministries. After selecting the ministries, then no appointment will take place until the Dictoria comes and he is appointed first. After he's appointed, then now they will begin to name the people who are going to be in those positions.
Under the transitional government, President Kiir's government will take 16 positions. Machar's opposition will take 10, while the remaining four ministries will be shared between the political parties and former detainees. SPLM-IO advance team member Angok Arthur says there is no looking back, adding the South Sudanese deserve peace.
For the people of South Sudan, what we would want to tell you is that stay committed to this peace and faithful. The peace agreement is for you, and we are here to assure you that it will be fully implemented as it is scheduled.
The international community, including the U.S. government and the European community, have welcomed the return of members of the opposition to the country and pledged their support to the full implementation of the peace agreement. For VOA News, I am Gumedes Rakarinj in Juba.
Ordinary Zimbabweans say they don't plan to change their buying habits after the recent surprise announcement from President Robert Mugabe's government that it will shift to the Chinese yuan as Zimbabwe's reserve currency. Sebastian Mofu has been in the streets of Harare and filed this report.
In 2009, Zimbabwe abandoned its worthless dollar and the Southern African nation started using almost all major currencies such as the dollar, South African rand and the British pound. But now, following the recent visit of the Chinese leader Xi Jinping, China's yuan will now become Zimbabwe's reserve currency. Edna Chara is a former high school teacher now driving a taxi in Zimbabwe. He also imports some goods for sale in Zimbabwe. He says no to yuan. He says we are not manufacturing most of our stuff. We import from other countries. So if you want to go to other countries, you will have to go to bank and get U.S. dollars. It will be hard to get U.S. dollars with yuan. He says he can foresee problems. Spiwe Sbanda shares his opinion. She imports computer and parts from South Africa to sell in Harare.
I don't see what difference it's going to make, at least in my life, because I've never traded in it. I've never had occasion to go to China. So I really don't think it's going to make much difference to me or have any advantage.
What currency do you prefer using?
The US dollar and the rand. I suppose the rand because of proximity and the US dollar because of its international nature.
That is the same for Douglas, selling vegetables and fruits in the streets of Harare, some of them imported from South Africa. He says the yuan would only be recognized in China and Zimbabwe. But with the dollar, if you take it to countries like Mozambique, it works. In the States, it works. Here in Zimbabwe, it works. I've been working as a vendor for 3 years. Since the adoption of the US dollar, it has helped us prosper, he says. But the trade between Zimbabwe and China has been growing over the years. So calls to keep the dollar as the flagship of Zimbabwe's multiple currency regime might fall on deaf ears. China is Zimbabwe's largest foreign investor, with interests ranging from construction and energy to telecommunications. China has also become the largest exporter of Zimbabwean products, mainly tobacco and minerals such as gold and diamonds. Western countries have restricted commerce with the country, accusing the government of human rights violations. Zimbabwe adopted a, quote, look east policy, unquote, focusing in particular on China and Russia after the United States and the European Union imposed sanctions on President Robert Mugabe and his senior officials in 2002 amid reports of vote rigging. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Europe in 2015 faced its most severe migration crisis in centuries as an estimated 1 million people fled war in Syria and poverty in the other countries of the Middle East and Africa and made the complicated trek across Turkey and Eastern Europe to reach Western Europe. With another 3 million migrants and refugees expected in 2016, the mass migration has raised questions about the future of Europe and the ability of its countries to absorb the migrants both culturally and economically. VOA Europe correspondent Luis Ramirez reports.
Migrants had been pouring into Europe for months, but these images of a drowned Syrian boy on a Turkish beach in September shocked the world and drew Western sympathy for those fleeing a worsening conflict in Syria. A gap in the fence between Serbia and Hungary saw thousands cross on a single day. Hungary, overwhelmed, put up a razor wire fence and in October closed its border. In Austria, the gateway to Western Europe, trains arriving from Hungary were met by applause. Young Austrian women welcomed the migrants and refugees with candy and cigarettes. This woman said Europe could not turn away these people and said questions about culture and assimilation are another discussion for another time.
I really don't know what the bigger picture is, but right now it's take care of the people, give them food, give them drink, give them shelter, and let them pass through.
Budapest's main train station was the focal point of the influx. Most there said their final destination was Germany or Sweden, where generous public assistance programs promised them a future.
Germany helps people if they need to study, if they need to make a new life.
But signs of strain came quickly for Europe. Sweden introduced border controls.
Det här är en ohållbar situation. Det är uppenbart att migrationspolitiken i EU måste ses över i sin helhet.
Skepticism grew even more after the terrorist attacks in Paris. Two of the attackers had traveled to Europe undetected, posing as refugees. Germany's leader welcomed the migrants earlier, but that changed by year's end.
We want to, and we will, reduce the number of refugees.
2015 ended with discussions on beefing up the borders, but Europe has no comprehensive plan on dealing with this tide of humanity, a phenomenon that leaders say is a test for the region. Luis Ramirez, VOA News, London.
It's 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with wrestling. Nigerian Commonwealth Games gold medalist Odunayo Adekuoroye outclassed Ukrainian Tatiana Kitt by 9 points to nil to win the women's 53-kilogram division at the inaugural Pro Wrestling League in New Delhi, India on Sunday. Adekuoroye has qualified for the 2016 Rio de Janeiro Olympics after bagging bronze medals at the World Wrestling Championship in Las Vegas, Nevada State in the United States of America, and the World Grand Prix in Baku, Azerbaijan earlier this year. Turning to football, visiting Egyptians held their Tunisian under-17 peers to a scoreless draw in the second friendly played in Tunis on Monday. Earlier on in the first encounter, Tunisia outclassed Egypt 3-0. In Angola, the Angolan Football Federation has sacked their national team coach, Romeo Filmon, the federation revealed in Luanda on Monday. The federation claims he has not resumed work following the Christmas Day break. Trouble has been brewing between the tactician and federation after Filmon publicly aired concern that he allegedly has not received his salary for 8 months. Angola is preparing for the African Nations Championship starting in Kigali, Rwanda in less than 3 weeks. Meanwhile, Jordanian FIFA presidential candidate Prince Ali bin Al Hussein has called for the immediate publication of the Michael Garcia report on alleged bribery and corruption in the bidding process for the 2018 and 2022 FIFA World Cup tournaments. Al Hussein made his position known while on a campaign stopover in Dubai, United Arab Emirates on Sunday. A former American prosecutor, Garcia resigned as FIFA's chief corruption investigator in protest at FIFA's handling of his report on the decision to award Russia and Qatar the 2018 and 2022 FIFA World Cup events respectively. According to Garcia, there were significant omissions in the summarized report released by FIFA ethics judge Hans Joachim Eckert. Prince Al Hussein stopped short of declaring he would release the full report should he be elected FIFA president on the 26th of February next year. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. This is our listener mail for this Tuesday morning, December 29th.
This is Bapa Adama, reporter from Gombe local government area of Adamawa State, Nigeria. I would like to utilize this opportunity to call upon my colleagues, primary school teachers, that it is high time that we should do everything possible to make sure that our pupils are learning. In a situation whereby our pupils can neither read nor write, what's in the situation they cannot even write their names, we are proving incapable. It is incredible. Even if we teach in darkness and in the absence of any instructional materials, there is no way that we can say that we are unable to teach our pupils how to write even their names.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. And that is it for this Tuesday, December 29th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Marco Ullman, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing every one of you in Africa a very good day.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, Pope Francis recently took his message of religious tolerance to Kenya, Uganda, and the Central African Republic. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC when host Shaka Sali and his guests discuss interfaith solutions to combat religious intolerance and extremism. That's next time on VOA Africa.
Next on Reporters Roundtable. Join me, Douglas Impuga, on Reporters Roundtable. I'll have African journalists and expert guests discuss the state of press freedom in Africa in the year 2015. So please join us on Thursday at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.